This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. As the end of summer nears, farmers around the Cooley region are getting ready for this year's harvest. Producers have continued to deal with low commodity prices, especially after China, Mexico, and other U.S. trading partners announced new tariffs on agricultural products. Joining us now to talk about these challenges and more are Bill Halfman, agricultural agent for University of Wisconsin Extension in Monroe County, Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Mark Greenwood, chief diversified markets officer for Compeer Financial. So Darren, how has this year's growing season been?
Well, probably the best way to describe it, it was very challenging in the beginning. In the middle, it was easy to do what needed to be done. And now we've entered another very challenging time because over the last week here now, we've seen extraordinary amounts of rain. And as corn silage harvest season is probably a week away, and they're talking rain pretty much every other day this week and into the first part of next week. So, as far as putting up corn silage, it's going to be a real challenge at this point in time because fields are just waterlogged here in western Wisconsin. And when we get this much at this time of the year, it takes, many days to dry it out. It's not going to be an overnight thing like you can see in the middle of summertime. So a real challenge.
Yeah, Bill, I wonder if you've been hearing from farmers who are worried about all of the rain and even the flash flooding impacting fields.
Yes, I definitely have been hearing from them as well. There's, in addition to making the fields a challenge to get out and do anything in with both the, any third cutting or fourth cutting hay they might be trying to make yet and corn silage coming up here. There's been a fair amount of property damage depending on where the farm and the buildings were located and how the water ran down through the valleys. And first thing, some folks are still trying to find all their livestock that were out on pasture and where are the fences and those kinds of things too. So it's not coming at a good time this fall.
Yeah, what options do farmers have when it comes to, kind of righting things on their farm? I mean, if they were having trouble cash flowing their operation before, I'm sure this is extra challenging.
It definitely is. Part of that is going to depend on what sort of insurance coverage they had for damage and things like that, and in some cases whether they'll be able to collect depending on the kind of damage it is. But this has definitely thrown more challenge and problems in for a lot of folks with margins already as sour as they are.
Yeah, Darren, and this is nothing new, unfortunately, for western Wisconsin. We've seen flash floods like this for the past 3 years. And so I don't know, is this something that farmers are trying to take into account more and more?
Well, it definitely takes into the planning for what can be done. Right now we're on the down creek side of Jersey Valley Dam, which washed out last week. And so we're trying to figure out as neighbors who's going to fix what fence and if we're even going to fix them at this point in time, because with that dam out, anytime we get any kind of rain at all, we can probably lose the fences. So, we've got those decisions. But, as far as crops go too, when corn needs to be chopped, it really needs to be chopped. So you end up waiting when the fields won't carry the equipment, you have to wait. So then you lose the nutrient value and the value that the animals get out of that crop. So there's, that's an extra burden or an extra stress on farmers because you really know you need to be out there, but you can't be. So, when prices are low and looks like they're going to continue to be low, there's added stress, added fatigue, and especially when you're looking at trying to find animals, separating neighbors, animals that get together in situations like this, it adds extra stress to the whole farming lifestyle. I think most farmers can adapt to that, when it's maybe every 5 or 6 year ordeal. But there's parts of Monroe County that have seen this, as you said, 3 years in a row now.
Mark, from a financial side of things, how can, farmers or producers even, factor these things in when they're looking at their finances?
That's a great question. And, the one thing with Mother Nature's generally in control, and as a producer, you, especially in the area that has been an impact over the last 3 years, you kind of keep wondering when I can catch a break. I think the best thing most producers can continue to do is, number one, really have an accurate snapshot of their current financial picture. The one thing that we always stress with our the people that work with our clients on a daily basis, to really have a good relationship. The producer should have a very good relationship with their loan officer and be more proactive in that relationship. Tell them what's happening. You're better off being transparent with your loan officer or with your lender, and it can really explain your situation. That gives the least a good handle on where they're at and gives the best opportunity to see what we can do to help them going forward.
Yeah, and Mark, I wonder, you know, if farmers do experience losses because of the flooding or because of bad weather, I mean, you know, what options are out there for them?
You know, I think Darren alluded to on the insurance side, there is some help there. Again, a lot of it depends on what type of coverage that they also had. In addition to that, you know, we working with FSA on some type of FSA guarantees is some options there that we have worked with FSA on getting some of that process, especially when you're looking at some operating needs. There are some options there that we can work with and try to help producers along the way there during some more challenging times.
Before we got to the most, you know, recent flooding issues, I know that the growing season, we were actually almost a week ahead of the five-year average for in a lot of places. And, you know, Bill, I wonder if you could talk about, I mean, what were the challenges, but maybe even good things we saw this year?
Well, as Darren indicated, we had a tough spring. We really didn't have spring. I mean, we went from winter to summertime, you know. And but once things kind of settled down, we actually did have a pretty decent growing season. It did get a little bit dry at the end here before we got all these heavy-duty rains. But I know we, an interesting example is we've been working with some hops growers on some research trials in their hops yards to kind of look at nitrogen fertilizer rates and things like that as kind of a specialty crop and helping them to be as efficient and environmentally friendly as possible. And so we were waiting for the hop vines to get growing, and they were slow at coming up out of the ground. But once they took off, you know, pretty soon the next thing you know, we look on the calendar, we're doing the same measurements at the same calendar dates we were last year, so they caught up. And then later this summer, we were actually even harvesting them a couple weeks ahead of normal. I was getting frantic phone calls, well, excited phone calls from the growers. Hey, we got to pick next week, and I know you're tied up with whatever this week, but, you know, they're going to be ready, and we got to get them on time before they go bad. So the season was really favorable for plant growth as long as you had moisture once it kind of settled down. And, you know, we saw a lot of that with other crops. We did see another thing we saw this spring was a lot of the alfalfa fields. There was a number of them that did not come through the winter as strong and vigorous as normal. And folks didn't realize that because they did green up, but then when they went out and started taking first cutting, they're like, the yield just isn't there like it's supposed to be. And that was probably some of winter stress, maybe some of last year's stress and some other factors coming in. And also that's also kind of another indicator that it was a different kind of a growing season.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of agriculture in the Cooley region, what issues farmers have been dealing with so far this year, and what's likely to impact producers for the rest of the year. We're here with Bill Halfman from UW Extension in Monroe County, Mark Greenwood from Compere Financial, and Darren Von Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Obviously, another big issue so far this year has been prices. We've seen, you know, prices have been low for the last few years now, especially milk prices, and we saw them take another hit after recent tariffs. And I wonder, Darren, if you could talk about, you know, how this is impacting farmers in the area.
Well, you know, it has been a challenge for a few years now. You know, this year's probably been a little bit harder over the last couple of months. From the 1st of July on, farmers are really uncertain what their pay price is going to be. You know, there is a little bit of knowledge because we do know what's going on in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. But at any point in time when another country decides to put a retaliatory tariff on a dairy product that's been going into that country, it's probably going to mean that there's too much product in this country, so it's going to lose, lose some value. And then also, you're looking at that market that you might not ever get back. So what's going to happen 6 months, 12 months, 2 years from now? Are we going to continue with this too much product on our shelves here in the United States? And are we going to actually be able to do something about that or not? The markets that we've been building for the last 15, 20 years with these countries, with the trade deals that we've had, and you lose them overnight, basically, when there's retaliatory tariffs. So it's probably the future uncertainty right now is what's going to affect more farmers' decisions in the next 6 months.
Yeah, Mark, how can farmers, even really plan for the future when it comes to, the current tariff situation and just a lot of our trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, being up in the air right now?
Yeah, when you look at really since, I call it about the middle of May, it seemed that we might have had a glimmer of hope, whether it's looking at Class 3 milk, probably prior to the middle of May, we're sitting a little bit over $17 in the middle of May for July. And then you had corn and soybeans where corn was close to $4 and beans were close to $10. Then shortly thereafter, all the trade issues came up. What we talk about now is probably the word called market volatility. And until some of these trade issues really get resolved, to expect volatility, probably making sure that you develop some type of risk management policy going forward on when there's a rally in the market, to try to use futures as best you possibly can to manage through some of that market volatility. It is not a perfect science, but to, number one, understand really what your cost of production is, and then take a look at hopefully some potential market rallies as they occur. I can clearly tell you on corn and soybeans today, it's not there today. You got beans sitting at probably in that part of the state of Wisconsin, probably sitting at about $7.20, and corn sitting at about $3.12. Now you're hoping that we do get some of those trade issues resolved, and we can get some of that export market back, and hopefully that we see some rallies in the market that we can take advantage of some of those rallies in the market. But right now, it is a difficult situation for any type of client to try to figure out, okay, how can I project a potential profit going forward?
Darren brings up this idea of losing those markets altogether, that trading partners won't return to buying U.S. goods, and seek those products elsewhere if tariffs continue. And Mark, I just wonder what your idea, what your thoughts are on that idea.
I don't think you can just flip the switch and get access to those markets back overnight. And I think it's making sure, and I think almost every major ag commodity group is telling how important exports are to the agriculture sector, because I would say the U.S. in general, and in my opinion, and I would think most farmers agree that the U.S. is best in the world at producing safe, affordable food, regardless of whatever commodity that we raise. And if we have the opportunity to compete against anybody else in the globe, we're probably the best place to get those products. And so the importance of having access to that trade is really important for us.
Bill, how much longer can farmers, deal with these issues, deal with these low prices? I mean, are producers reaching a breaking point?
That's a good question, and that does vary from farm to farm. A lot of it's going to depend on what is the financial status of those farms? How much equity have they built up? How much debt do they have? Everybody's cost of production is a little bit different when you figure in some of the direct costs are probably the same for everybody, like seed and diesel fuel and those kinds of things. There's not a lot of difference, but when you look at interest paid and service to debt and those kinds of things, that's where you start to see the difference. And so, you know, well-established farms that are in good financial shape will be able to hang on longer than, it doesn't say they're necessarily making money now, but they'll be able to, you know, hang on longer than some of the ones that are highly leveraged and have additional expenses or aren't maximizing the use of some of their assets. And so that's a, it depends on each situation. And as Mark was saying, everybody needs to know what their cost of production is and be visiting with their loan officer. That's part of how that comes into play to help people go through. I mean, some folks now, probably for the last, even close to a year now, we've seen, you know, folks saying enough is enough, and they're exiting the farm business, some by their choice and some because they can't get any help from a lender anymore because they're tapped out on what they can borrow. So, you know, that's not widespread, but it is starting to become a little more common than it was, and you do hear about it.
Yeah, Mark, are you seeing some more producers, you know, not having access to funds because they're just too highly leveraged?
You know, I would say when we look at Compeer overall, and if you look at what we're working with, I would say overall economics are tighter just because of where current prices are at. Now, I would say whether or not they have, are they completely tapped out? Again, I would go back to even what Darren talked about. It's really dependent on each individual farm's and their operation situation and just each situation. And really what we encourage our people to do is, number one, have an assessment, and you got to take each operation one by one and really get a good assessment there and see what options can we do for them and what options that operation actually wants to do as well. It kind of goes back to, I think Darren talked about it, where people say, okay, I'm tired. I want to, you know, potentially do something else. That might sometimes, as hard as that potentially is, that might be the best thing for them. Now, we don't always like saying that, but ultimately, sometimes, you know, it's really up to that individual operation and that farming operation to decide what's best for them as well, given their financial circumstances.
Yeah, Darren, I wonder if this is an issue that you guys at the Wisconsin Farmers Union have been talking about.
Yeah, it is, you know, and we've kind of been focusing a little bit more on dairy this year within the organization, dealing with prices, because we've heard that from a lot more of our members, although we have corn and soybean and hog producers and a few beef folks, too, that are, you know, saying, why aren't we getting more attention on this, too? And because, as Mark and Bill have both said, there is a lot of stress on every commodity this year. It's not just one particular one at all, but you know, we're working with farmers from throughout the country at this point in time, trying to figure out if there is a mechanism to control supply, you know, that would benefit all producers. You know, we're seeing it's really started here back in 2016 with the grassland issue and a bunch of producers receiving a letter. So the processor was picking winners and losers at that point in time. And, you know, I think we've always been a country of neighbors, you know, and when you look back in the past, neighbors helped neighbors out, and we're getting at a time now where it's neighbors cutting each other's throats, and that's just a situation that I don't like, and I don't think most of our members like neither. So how can we as communities work together to make sure that the community stays strong? And if you don't have good, strong financials within the community, which most time is, you know, especially in rural Wisconsin, where it's dependent on farm and agriculture, to have those finances, we're all losing out in the end. So, you know, we've been trying to find that mechanism. It's something that's most likely going to have to be legislated. We do have the Farm Bill right now that's in discussion and probably going to be finalized here, you know, maybe before the end of the year, but maybe it won't be too. It's, you know, kind of up in the air right now. So, you know, what are those mechanisms? Is there something that we can do as farmers ourselves to improve this process? Or are we going to have to wait around for the legislative action to take place? And there's just way too many farmers right now that don't have that time. You know, we're hearing weekly about farmers that are selling cattle that, you know, fourth, fifth generation dairy farms that are losing, they're losing the heart. And when you lose the heart from the community, that's a serious thing that we need to be looking at.
Yeah, you mentioned the farm bill, and that is going to be, you know, a huge issue this year. And you know, we've seen lawmakers in Washington getting ready to kind of iron out the details between the House and Senate versions of the farm bill. Darren, what do you think the biggest impact will be from that legislation?
You know, the thing that I wish we could go back in and renegotiate that thing right now is for some long-term issues on trade. You know, the current farm bill has very little trade language in it, and with everything that's happened this summer with the tariffs and the retaliation, you know, there is some money that's coming towards producers here in the next few weeks, probably because of a bailout through the CCC. But, you know, we should have something that's going to be more permanent, something that's going to be in place so that when you have issues like this come up, producers actually can figure out what's going on. You know, right now, you know, dairy is kind of taking a kick in the shorts. Corn is really not getting anything, you know, a penny bushel. You know, it's going to cost them, the government, probably more to write out the checks than what it's worth. Soybeans are going to do fairly well, but yet you're looking at a half a year's production versus full year's production. So at current prices, you know, as Mark said earlier, there just isn't any way to win in any of the commodities at all. So, you know, it'd be nice if we could, but I think that process is too far along to go back and change the farm bill. At Farmers Union, we've been very supportive of the House or of the Senate side of the farm bill. They seem to have a few more of the programs that we're concerned about. As we're seeing these floods and stuff, conservation programs are probably a big thing. The House is looking to gut quite a few of that, a few of those programs. So, you know, hopefully our senators can stick to their guns and say, you know, we need to keep conservation and fund conservation in the farm bill.
Mark, I wonder what your thoughts are on the biggest impacts of the farm bill. You know, what pieces are you guys really looking at?
You know, and the one interesting thing when you look at the farm bill, SNAP is still such a very large part of the overall farm bill. I would also agree with the previous comments, is making sure that we have fair and equitable access to trade markets more than anything else. And that really is the key part in terms of making sure that we have, you know, I'd say crop insurance is a bit of a safety net. It would be another key item for us, but also making sure we have access and more of an emphasis on the export market as well. There's always often such a misunderstanding within the general public about the farm bill and what percent of the overall farm bill is really about SNAP versus what actually goes directly to farmers as well. And I think that education piece is a really important piece for everyone to understand.
And Bill, I wonder if you have thoughts on you know, what are going to be the biggest impacts to farmers in this area of the state from the farm bill? You know, what are you hearing from farmers if they're paying attention to this, you know, legislative process?
Well, honestly, their biggest thing we hear and sit here and look at is just kind of waiting to see how it plays out until it's actually signed. It'd be hard to say what the implications are. You know, specifically with the recent floods, I would echo what Darren said. You know, some of the conservation programs that kind of disappeared. I mean, there is land around most of the country that would be better off putting in some kind of set-aside program and still managed, you know, from an environmental friendly standpoint, but doesn't need to be in production. But if the farmer owns it, they're still going to have to pay taxes and things on it. So we can't just say, well, you can't do anything with it. So that's a tough one to balance out the pros and cons to. But that, You know, and the trade is also a huge part of it, because if you look at everything that we produce in the country and everything we actually domestically use, you know, what's going to make the difference in prices is the stuff that we don't use domestically that we can sell to other countries. That's what's going to help. There's only so much we're going to be able to use here in the country. So all those come into play, but a lot of folks are just saying, well, we really won't know until, you know, they come up with some kind of final ruling and it's signed.
Do you feel like farmers think their voice is heard in Washington when these conversations are happening? You know, I think we heard that a lot from farmers when these tariffs first started coming out, and, you know, a concern that, you know, Washington officials weren't paying attention to how this was impacting farmers, right?
Right now, I think a lot of farmers, the ones that I talk to, feel like they're not being heard very well because of the situation that we're in, and they're saying, you know, there are reasons why we're in the situation we're in now, and they don't seem to want to fix them.
Bill Halfman, UW Extension agent from Monroe County, is here with us today to talk about the state of agriculture in the Cooley region and the rest of Wisconsin. Also joining us are Mark Greenwood from Compeer Financial and Darren Von Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Coming up, we'll hear more about the current financial state of farms and what they can expect the rest of the year. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Farmers have dealt with a number of challenges this year, from continued low prices to new tariffs. As the growing season nears its end, we're taking a look at how farmers are doing in the Cooley region and the rest of the state. Joining us are Bill Halfman, agriculture agent for University of Wisconsin Extension in Monroe County, Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Mark Greenwood, chief diversified markets officer for Compeer Financial. As Darren brought up in the last half of the show, we've, you know, kind of seen some more details about President Donald Trump's aid package and tariff relief package, if you will. And we're going to be, farmers across the country are going to be seeing about $4.7 billion in aid. I wonder, Mark, is this going to be enough to offset the impact that tariffs have had on prices this year?
You know, when you look at the initial overall package in general, it compared to what we're losing on the tariff side, it's not going to meet what the overall losses are. And, you know, it's number one, appreciated that we're getting some support. But I think if you would talk to any producer in any ag commodity group across the U.S., we just want to have access to fair trade. And if we get that, we believe we can be very competitive, and it's in the best interest of U.S. agriculture as well.
Yeah, I think this has been a really united message we've heard across the ag industry, this trade, not aid message. And Darren, I wonder, you know, as the leader of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, you know, has that been a unifying experience for farming groups in the state?
Yeah, I would say it has. You know, I think there's been a lot more discussion between leadership but then also amongst the members of the organizations too. We're seeing more and more where Farm Bureau and Wisconsin Farmers Union are talking about the same issue and have the same ideas. And we, you know, we've had some of that over the years where we agree on a lot more issues than we disagree on. But this year, I think it's really been brought to the forefront as far as, you know, the trade issues, especially that farmers really want to get our pay price, or we want to get our payment from the marketplace. We don't want the Uncle Sam is giving you more and more dollars. It's, you know, it's there and available from the consuming public, whether it's American consumers or foreign consumers. You know, those dollars are available, and we as farmers feel much better about getting the dollars that we deserve from the consumer versus a handout from the government.
As Bill mentioned earlier in the second half, you know, farmers don't feel like their voice is being heard right now by officials who are making these decisions about trade and tariffs. And, you know, I wonder if that's frustrating to have, you know, a unified voice from every farm, you know, organization saying the same thing, but still not, you know, seeing progress maybe on that.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that there really wasn't a game plan going into this. You know, maybe the president did have his own game plan, but the rest of the administration didn't seem to know what was going on. You know, if there was a road that we knew we were going down, farmers would probably feel a little bit more confident and maybe feel that we're, you know, being heard at least, maybe not being listened to, but being heard. You know, I think there's that. This president has talked about farmers a lot more than the past three presidents combined, I think, you know, because it seems like weekly he is talking about farmers. But at the end of the day, at the end of the month here, we're still not getting what we need to get from the marketplace and don't have the ability to make a difference in that because we are price takers. So, you know, I think one of the unifying things that we're hearing out in the countryside is that farmers are going to have to start to take more control of their own destiny, you know, and that means getting together, which is something that was done back in the early 1900s and the 1930s with the whole drought disaster and stuff that happened back then. And so, you know, it's good to feel that unifying voice that we're seeing. It's just too bad that there's too many of us that are exiting the business because of the current price situations.
We've been talking a lot about the ag economy and how, you know, low prices have really been impacting that. But I wonder, Mark, if you can talk a little bit about, you know, what we're seeing when it comes to, you know, the rural economy, broader outside of just agriculture, but, you know, kind of what's the state of the economy in a lot of rural areas?
You know, it's a great question. The interesting part is, and, you know, agriculture is absolutely critical to having a vibrant rural community. But if you're looking, if you're a dairy producer or any producers looking for help, labor is extremely tight. Unemployment is probably at as low of an area as what we've seen in quite some time. So that way, we're in a much different situation than what we've seen in previous historical ag slumps, that, you know, the overall general economy is actually not doing bad. We actually, if we get to a point where we get fair trade and export policy, I think, you know, the communities will continue to grow. But if you're across the Midwest right now, if you look at unemployment rates, we're at more than full employment. And the biggest struggle, I would say, most producers are having that has any type of production ag is finding adequate labor and that labor supply. And you know, when you're struggling with milk prices and then you're having to pay more for help in order to get help, that is an issue that we're continuing to struggle with. Now, if it's a producer that says, hey, I'm going to decide to maybe potentially exiting the dairy industry, but find a job. There are jobs available that can hopefully provide actual medical benefits as well, and that is a good thing. The other thing that we haven't talked about within this group is just the cost of rising healthcare costs for family farms, which is, when you look at the cost of family living in the last 3 years, that has went up exponentially from any data that we've continued to see as well, which is another concern that we have for the ag sector.
Bill, I wonder if you are hearing from farmers on any of these issues, more than just kind of getting by with low prices, but also taking a look at these other challenges, like when it comes to labor costs or even just, costs like health care.
That's definitely been a topic of discussion with farmers actually for a number of years, more so now than maybe the last, five or seven. But definitely with the shortage of folks that are working or available folks to work, and the prices that folks are having to pay for labor, it does take away a lot of the potential labor market for on the farms that do need to have some labor. As an example, one of the kids that we worked with this summer for some different projects, he was working at a sandwich and ice cream shop, and they were paying him $18 an hour to scoop ice cream. I mean, maybe I'll go help scoop ice cream too if you're going to pay. But that's kind of a reflection of if you want good help, you're going to, it's going to cost. And a lot of folks that are working, they're putting in all the hours that they can stand to put in for their employers and different things like this. And that comes back to having, time to do things with their families and things like that as well, just to try to help keep businesses going. Definitely healthcare has been a challenge for quite a while, and that's why in a lot of farms anymore, if it's a family farm, either one of the spouses will work off the farm, and in some cases they've said even if they would just give us healthcare, it would be worth working there. I'm not encouraging that to happen, but that there is a lot of need for those kinds of things to somehow get figured out and sorted out and hopefully in a better place than they are right now.
I wonder what all of these, issues surrounding agriculture, not just low prices, but, the other challenges that farmers are facing, what that means for the next generation of farmers who are trying to break into the industry. I mean, do these things just make it that much more challenging?
They do. If we look back in the 80s, which was one of the last times that we had a broad spectrum, very sour ag economy for somewhat different reasons than we have now, you did not see very many farm families encouraging their kids to come back and farm with them at all. I mean, a lot of them were dead set that you will not come back here and farm. And that was, people my age, we were in high school then and then going to college and whatever. That was kind of the trend, was very few at that point in time were going back right away. Some went back later on after things got better, but there was a lot of pushback from the parents that this is not going to, with the way things are now, this does not look as a bright future for you. And I think we're, 7-8 years ago, when prices were as high as we saw for a long, long time, there was a lot of interest and a lot of new young people coming in back to the farm and things. And that was good and exciting, and, it was really nice to see those kinds of things. But I think that's, from what I can see, that's cooled off quite a bit because of the situation that we're in and the uncertainty of where we go from here. So, there is some history repeating itself a little bit for different reasons right now.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of agriculture in the Cooley region, what issues farmers have been dealing with so far this year, and what's likely to impact producers the rest of the year. We're here with Bill Halfman, Ag Agent for University of Wisconsin Extension in Monroe County, Mark Greenwood, Chief Diversified Markets Officer for Compeer Financial, and Darren Von Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Darren, I know that looking to the next generation of farmers has been an issue that the Wisconsin Farmers Union has focused on in the past. And I just wonder, we talked earlier about the Farm Bill and how that is a big issue facing farmers this year. Are you hopeful that we're going to be seeing some more help for new and beginning farmers in the Farm Bill?
Right now, there's the same package they've had in the past, which hasn't necessarily brought a lot of new producers into the ag industry. So there's dollars available. The bigger question is, as Bill said too, if the parents don't want their kids to come home to the farm because they've struggled so hard just to pay the bills or to try to put their kids into college and help out to have a future for them. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of program you have. If there's no will or no want, you can't force somebody to do something they don't want to do. And you know, I guess, you know, as Wisconsin Farmers Union, we've really felt frustrated by you know, farm families pushing their kids away from home. That's just, that shouldn't have to happen. But when you are struggling so bad financially and you do it for 20 years and you have $0 left in the bank after 20 years, it's really hard to get that next generation involved. So, you know, it's a serious issue. And I think, you know, this farm bill doesn't address it the way it needs to be done. You know, hopefully we can get some legislation going either in the states or in Washington, D.C. over the next few months or the next year anyway to start addressing what the real issues are versus the Band-Aids that we've been seeing with government aids. Or, you know, the insurance program certainly does have some protection there for farmers, but yet in the end, is it really helping the farmers pay the bills at the end of the year?
I also imagine this is something that you're going to be focusing on as part of your work on the Wisconsin Dairy Task Force. We saw Governor Walker create this Task Force 2.0 earlier this year to kind of look at, you know, making the dairy industry profitable in our state. And I just wonder, you know, you guys had your first meeting of that group, and I wonder how that went.
Yeah, we had the first meeting August 13th, and it was more a formation meeting, I guess. We got handed our rules and of to-dos and not-to-dos that we can do. We did form eight different committees, trying to get three or four of us on each committee to look at those issues. It's going to be too late for too many farmers, I think, is probably the best way to describe this process, because there really isn't going to be anything done or the program or the ideas that we come up with won't really be announced for at least a year, because that's the process that we're going through. You know, get the committees, get the full group together three or four times over the next year, and then announce the end product that we come up with. And you know, as the dairy industry has matured, you know, the Dairy Task Force 1.0 back in the 80s had a lot of good ideas, and it certainly helped the dairy industry with the addition of many different specialty cheeses that have come out. You know, there was more dollars put into research back then to help develop these new products. You know, some of the talk that I've had with some of the processors in the state and then at the meeting too was, you know, what's this next new big item that's going to sell a lot more milk like specialty cheeses did? And nobody really seems to know what that is. You know, there's been talk at some of our meetings around the state that if we could find a way to make alcohol out of beer, we could probably sell more of it too, but then the corn guys aren't going to like us. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, that next new big item isn't pointing itself out to us right now. And I don't know that the task force will necessarily find it. But then, you know, with the year process that it's going to take, too, is it's not going to be soon enough for too many farmers in the state of Wisconsin.
Mark, as someone who looks at the financial side of these sorts of things, I mean, from your perspective, is it viable to keep imagining trying to find, you know, this next big thing that Darren's referring to? Or do you feel like there needs to be a readjustment of in the ag industry that you know, low prices might be kind of the future for the next, for, you know, 5-10 years?
You know, I'm old, and when we talk about the 80s, I actually graduated from college in the early 80s, and interest rates were at a very high period, 18% interest and all that kind of stuff. I always say we probably go through cycles, and things will continue to evolve and change along the way. I think as industry, ag is one of them that's going through another period of change. I do believe that people that can adapt to that change and probably manage through some periods of volatility and also probably some periods of where tougher economics will probably have opportunities to prosper down the road. Now, I think the big question that all of us have is, well, how long is this going to last? If I knew that, I don't think I'd probably be talking to you. But I would say that we're probably going through a period of change. Things will continue to change and evolve over a period of time. But I still believe, regardless of any commodity you raise, if you're always in that top third of what you do, you always will have an opportunity somewhere down the road. Now, making sure you can manage through those cycles is really the important part. And that's easier said than done, but I believe, and I always, you know, when you're talking to producers, part of it is you got to have a certain mindset. I believe that you have to have that mindset that you're going to have to be good and above average in what you do, because if you're able to do that, you will have some opportunities down the road, and you know, you just manage through the cycles. And we're going through a tough cycle right now. In 2014, we're in a much different cycle, and and when will that return? At this time, I don't know, but it'll eventually turn around again.
Who are the most resilient in these times, right? Like, what makes up a resilient farm when we get to these periods of low prices?
Yeah, tremendous question. The first thing most people say, well, it's always a matter of size, and I'll say, no, it's not. Just because you're large, that doesn't mean that you're going to be more successful than a smaller producer. I would say it is, number one, having a very good idea of what your current financial situation is. You do know your cost of production. We talk a lot about working capital, which is, you know, your amount of liquidity that you have in order to manage through a downturn, is making sure that you have that adequate working capital along the way. And, you know, probably doing an honest assessment all the time, with constant continuous improvement on what you need to work on going forward on your business and on your family operation in order to be better the next day. That takes from time to time, looks in the mirror, and also probably having people, whether it's your extension agent or your loan officer or a consultant, that I'd call it a trusted advisor, that provides you guidance to assure, and then taking that guidance to make your operation better. And those are the things that I think that we look at, or I call it attributes that we look at that people that will continue to probably thrive and prosper long term.
One potential bright spot we've seen in the state's ag industry this year was industrial hemp. I know a lot of farmers were excited about it. Bill, I wonder if you heard from any farmers in Monroe County who are looking to grow hemp or did end up planting hemp this year, and what they've been saying.
Well, when the law went into effect, signed into law, we did get a lot of phone calls last fall wondering about how to grow it and all these kinds of things. And, of course, at that time, the best answer we could give was we have to wait until they actually get the details and the law finished out. And then we did have discussions with some folks, and some folks did apply and got permits to grow. And I know there's some fields that they are growing, and they've had some challenges along the way with their first year growing it. It's a different crop, and you know, we've got a lot to learn. And so is there some potential there? Yes. The thing I find interesting is, so far, all of the interest has been in the seed and the potentially the CBD oil as well. But there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion about the use of the fiber for construction materials and other things yet. There's really not been any discussion about that potential opportunity with it as well. And of course, the whole situation now is it's a pilot program, and so they're, you know, learning about how does it grow in Wisconsin compared to other places and some of those kinds of things. And the whole industry is kind of at its infancy. So if you're growing it, where are you going to sell it? And most of the folks that I talk to, I encourage them to make sure you have somebody that will buy this stuff from you at the end of the season before you plant the seed. Otherwise, what are you going to do with it? So, but it's been a lot of discussion. I don't think it's necessarily going to be the silver bullet, so to speak, but it is another possible crop that could help.
Darren, what do you think will be the biggest issue facing producers the rest of this year?
Right now, the way it looks is going to be Mother Nature. You know, if Mother Nature doesn't straighten out and give us the good weather, the sunshine that we need to harvest our crops, that certainly is going to probably be the biggest thing. The next issue simply will be the marketing too, whether or not there's going to be markets available to take corn and soybeans and wheat off the fields. You know, dairy is a business that's pretty much entrenched, and we know what's going to happen there. The futures markets come up a little bit over last week, so it's looking like prices can come up a little bit, but depending on what happens with the trade deals too, you know, that raise right now could disappear by the end of September. So, you know, lots of uncertainty, whether it's Mother Nature or markets, farmers really have to take a good hard look and see, you know, what we can and can't do, and kind of draw the line where we feel that we have to be at for as far as price and what we can do with Mother Nature, as Mother Nature is always throwing things at us.
We've been talking with Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Bill Halfman, UW Extension agent from Monroe County, and Mark Greenwood, chief diversified markets officer for Compeer Financial, about the current state of agriculture in the Cooley region and what challenges farmers will continue to face in 2018. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.